And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome to Onto Waveland. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. This podcast is also brought to you by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sadhav Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Speaking of Topps, I figure I would mention, I don't know if you guys saw the one, the Project 70 that was for this week. It was an Ernie Banks sort of like styled in the 1956 style. Pretty cool. Did you guys get a chance to look at that, or am I the only, I'm not the only baseball card nerd in this group.
I'm definitely a baseball card nerd, and I check it out. I check out Topps Project 70 pretty regularly, and I definitely noticed the Banks one. They've had a couple Banks ones, and they're nice. I'm a fan of what Topps has been doing this year and last year as well with their Project 2020. So they've been doing some fun stuff with some fun artists. People that I talk to, I know Megan on the Cubs beat as well is a card collector, and I chat with her a lot about what's going on with Project 70 and which ones we're collecting and which artists we're focused on. But it's always nice to see a Cub. There haven't been as many Cubs as I think Cubs fans would like, so it's always nice when there's a Banks or a Javi that pops up.
They had a Sammy Sosa one maybe that we might have mentioned on the podcast a few weeks ago, and a buddy of mine just got his physical one in the mail, and so he was texting us about that. He was pretty stoked to have that one.
Sammy Sosa, who's this you speak of? Is he on Marquee? Is he one of the Marquee analysts, or is he singing the seventh inning stretch this weekend?
I believe there's a bit of clever marketing going on. He's been held out of the mix in the Hall of Fame and those things so that there can be this momentous event, the unveiling of Sammy's plaque. It will be the most celebrated plaque since certain other plaques. We already had the plaque cast, so we have to move on from that. But we're here to talk Cubs, obviously, and that comes on the heels of a series sweep. The Cubs, they're great again, right? They can sweep the Twins. They're back, baby. I mean, I'll dispense with the cognitive dissonance at the top. That was a very important series in terms of reverse standings. And in that respect, and in that respect alone, it went quite horribly for the Cubs. Those were essentially two, if you look ahead on the schedule, kind of two must-lose games if you wanted to try to stay ahead of the Twins. Didn't happen. So the Cubs are just going to have to put on their big boy pants and lose some of these Pirates games this week. But we'll leave it there, because there was some good stuff in the series. And I never want to forget the fact that, like, for example, if Justin Steele were to take steps forward, right, and develop as a starting pitcher and contribute as a starting pitcher, that has way more value than being like one pick higher and one slightly larger bonus pool in next year's draft. And so I certainly don't want to lose sight of that, and I don't want folks to lose sight of that, because at least for last night's game, I thought that was I keep using the word interesting. Every time Justin Steele starts, I'm like, that was interesting. And it was, and we'll get into why, but it was also compelling. I thought it was a very well-approached game by both in terms of what he tried to execute and did. And then, obviously, with Adbert Alzolay coming back and pitching out of the bullpen and getting the very rare four-inning save. So that was a very impressive night from those two pitchers, I thought, against a Twins team that's quite bad, but that a lineup that still has some thunder in it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when it comes to Justin Steele, I think what I took away from that start, and just what I want to see continue going forward, is that fastball command. He didn't have his slider, right? He said he didn't even have it. he kind of noticed in pregame warmups, and they adjusted the game plan because of that, kind of on the fly. I think that's huge, because that slider is a huge weapon for him. But here's the thing, like, if he doesn't have the feel for it, he has two fastballs that he's learning to command and that he really commanded pretty well yesterday. And he also has a curveball that he's thrown since he was a teenager. Like, this guy's had the curveball forever. He learned the slider last year at the alt site. So to have that in his back pocket, it's not his best breaking ball, right? The slider, when it's on, it's a nasty pitch, and it's his best pitch. It's his best, swing and miss pitch. But to have that curveball, these are the types of things that David Ross talks about when he talks about it's got to go beyond stuff. It's got to go beyond what the pitch data says. I want to see someone battle out there when they don't have their best stuff. That's really important to becoming a major league starter. I don't know what Justin Steele is going to end up as. He clearly has the ability to be a multi-inning reliever at minimum. Can he be a starter? Can he eat 5-6 innings as a fourth or fifth starter? That's what we're trying to figure out here right now, right? And I liked yesterday's outing. I'd say, like, if you can kind of do what yesterday's outing and bring in what he had in the Reds outing when he was in Cincinnati, I think you mix those two outings and that's a starter that's really interesting. Then that's the guy where you're like, okay, yeah, I feel good about going with this guy as a back end rotation piece. But yeah, right now we're just learning more about him. And I like little outings like that where it's like, okay, I battled through, don't have everything that I should have, but I know how to get out still.
Brett, did you compare Justin Steele to Sean Marshall? Was that one of your writings? I thought that was a good comparison.
Yeah, we had mentioned it before, but then it was just a funny happenstance that Marquis sent out, or in their broadcast, they had mentioned, God, it was a crazy stat, and I'm going to mess it up a little bit, but it was like Cubs rookie starting pitchers who've gone at least 5 innings and allowed one or fewer hits or something like that. And it was this Justin Steele outing, Sean Marshall from, 10 years ago or whatever, and the Kerry Wood game. Which was just a funny mix. But that Marshall, it stands out, especially given what we remember about Marshall's ability to kind of, just couldn't quite get over those middle innings, couldn't quite be efficient enough to extend his outings, but we knew he was dominant in relief. And they're both big, tall lefties with great breaking pitches, good live fastballs. Yeah, I mean, I like that comparison.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Steele's not that tall, but I think it's a good reminder. Like, Sean Marshall is a very good.
Hey, everybody is tall to me. Okay.
Well, I mean, like, Sean Marshall is is like very tall, and Justin Steele is not. I don't know why I'm getting fixated on this, but.
You keep talking. I'm going to say
Sean Marshall had an outstanding major league career, and that if that is what Justin's.
I'm just interrupting this. I am just I am stamping all over this because Justin Steele is 6'2". If that is not tall, then I have been living in hell my entire life because I would come up to his shoulder.
Well, if that's what they're saying in the media guide, like, okay.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Yeah, what am I in the Cubs media guide? I might be able to pull 6 feet.
Sean Marshall's two defining traits are he's really tall and left-handed, and I get the left-handed part with Steele, but I would not go there. But I like where your head's at otherwise in terms of Sean Marshall, great career. I liked Auzele kind of in that role instead of like anointing him as this like number two pitcher maybe for the next 5 years, that he's been really interesting in these shorter bursts against certain pockets of a lineup. And as they're trying to build this thing, I think there's a lot of value in what those guys could potentially do. And if the floor is like Sean Marshall, that's really interesting for Steele. And if Auzele could be this like weapon that they use out of the bullpen, like, I think, you know, if you're a Cubs fan, you can get on board with that, because that is far more reasonable than thinking any of these guys are going to throw 200 innings next year.
Hey, can I drop a comp from that same era for Auzele, since we're doing, you know, that 2000, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 Cubs era? How about Rich Harden for Auzele, right? If you only wanted 4 or 5 innings, it plays up a little bit. He adds a mile per hour to the fastball. can limit the pitch mix a bit. You maybe don't have to see as many lefties, so on and so on. Because that was always the knock on Harden. I mean, he was fan-freaking-tastic for five innings, and then he had used up everything he had, and he was done. So, all right, the Cubs, they're just recreating that, 2007, 2008 crew.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
a
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
One other thing to note from the wins in Minnesota. Well, I mean, there were other things too. That, like, just a random note on the mammoth Ian Happ home run from the right-handed side. I mean, that thing was holy smokes. And he just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to. It's like we're in this zone where you can't say anything charitable about
you're
Ian Happ right
to,
now.
No.
Yeah, without people being like, "Oh, you're just trying to rehab a terrible season." No, I'm just. He's been fantastic for like a month and a half now. That's all I'm saying. It's just, those are just numbers. And then, man, that was just a really fun freaking home run. As far as individual homers go, that was a fun one to watch.
It's, yeah, I'm so hesitant on the Ian Happ train right now, just because he's shown, right? We've seen months put together. We've seen stretches of great play. It's still, you know, overall, well below average season. I don't even think he has a 300 on base percentage yet. Listen, we know Ian Happ, what he can do when he's right. Something clearly was off for a while. If he's able to get back in a rhythm, and yeah, I mean, he's obviously a talented player. You don't get drafted in the top 10 if you're not. So we've seen what he can do when he's right. I just hesitate with Ian Happ every single ever since this extended stretch. It's like, okay, I need. It's going to be. I'm not sure if there's anything he can do this year that tells me, yeah, I feel good about Ian Happ. Right? That's not possible. It's not possible. That ship has sailed as far as feeling comfortable about Ian Happ's future. But sure, you want him to have a good ending to this season, a good final September. And kind of go into the off season, reset, and hopefully try and carry over whatever was good and flush the most of this season for him.
Can Ian Happ play first base? I was trying to think of like Sahadev and I were writing yesterday about, you know, kind of talking about the idea of, you know, would Rizzo come back? Probably not. And it does seem like the Cubs are into the Schwindels, Wisdoms, Rivases, and I don't know, could you throw Happ over there too? Because it seems like they're collecting lots of these types of hitters, and that's, I don't know where this is going, but I think they've like seen enough to where they're going to want to keep some of these guys around and see what they could do on an extremely kind of low cost and kind of mix and match and move guys around. And maybe that is more like Happ speed, that maybe he's not like the center fielder, leadoff hitter, everyday guy of the future, but as an interchangeable piece and a guy who has to like earn it from opening day next year, I guess maybe. I guess it depends on how you feel about Schwindel, Brett.
Yeah, well, I think that that's probably one other useful thing to point out from this Twin series is that Schwindel is back on a little bit of a hot streak. And I mean, he hasn't really cooled down with the Cubs necessarily, but the, three games with a homer in a row, it kind of just brings it back to people talking about him after people focused on Patrick Wisdom and the Rivas call up. And I think, you know, when you dig in on Schwindel's numbers, he's over 100 plate appearances with the Cubs now. So while that's still not nearly enough to say we know for sure what he would be in the future, it at least gives you some measure of confidence about some of the contact quality, some of the swing and miss, things like that that tend to stabilize relatively quickly. And what you find is that his extremely strong results, which, I mean, he's got a weighted runs created plus near 170, are probably not entirely earned. There probably is a good bit of good fortune based on the contact quality. But at the same time, you know, he is hitting the ball at an almost ideal launch angle, not to get too down in the weeds. He is not striking out. He's taking just enough walks. The discipline looks to be good. He is not hitting the ball on the ground. I mean, he's doing a lot of things that would support good production, legit good production. It's just that, you know, he's got a BABIP that's like almost 400, and there's just, you dig into the data and there's never a, it's a little more art than science. You know, you sort of are looking at the things, you're like, okay, is this, could this be supportable? And I don't really see enough in there to say, oh yeah, yeah, he's totally earning a 385 BABIP or whatever it is. So I would expect some, if he keeps performing like this, you would expect some natural regression in the productivity, in the numbers. But he still would look like an above-average hitter and a guy who's not making anything. And when you don't have that spot filled otherwise, and if he's going to be part of a mix of guys, I don't know. I wouldn't have the biggest complaints in the world about saying, you know what, screw it. We're going to spend the money on the rotation, maybe on an outfielder. Maybe we'll look at that shortstop pool. But first base, third base, we're going to go with Wisdom, Rivas, Schwindel. Maybe, like you said, Ian Happ works in there some. I'd be fine with that as long as they did what they needed to do elsewhere.
So I believe we talked about this briefly in another podcast, but just a quick look. I need to, of course, I bring it up and I shift things around. He's hitting 358 with a 776 slugging against fastballs, right? So he's just destroying fastballs. 250 batting average, 386 slugging against breaking, 200, 300 against off-speed, right? We're already seeing a shift in usage of the fastballs against him, which is obvious. I mean, you know that's going to happen, right? That's pretty natural. If a guy shows you he can handle fastballs, this is the progression we see in adjustments, right? And it's gotten so September doesn't really count since it's one day, but apparently he got off-speeded to death yesterday and still hit that 3-run shot. I think it was off a fastball.
It was a fastball up and in fastball.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that you brought up, along with the fact that he's just crushing fastballs, I guess what this is, it goes back to what we were saying before with Wisdom, you know, like with he has that hole at the top of the zone. Okay, well, maybe you get creative with how you platoon these guys. And I agree with you, Brett. If they're going to go spend money this offseason, and I think we agree that nobody's expecting Jed Hoyer to hand out any 6-year deals or monster contracts, but yeah, they're going to spend some money to fill out that roster so it's not the same, you know, expectation to lose 90 plus games. Why go out and spend on a big first baseman, on a no doubt first baseman, when you have all these pieces that can handle first base DH and just kind of, you know, they're interesting. Are they high upside prospects? Schwindel certainly is not, right? He's 30 years old. If he can continue to perform at some high above average level, you'd take that, right? Even for next year. This level, I mean, obviously you take that. That's special. But I don't expect that going forward. Rivas is interesting, but no power at first base. That's really hard to have that guy be your full-time first baseman, but he's a good defender. Schwindel is you know, Schwindel's fine, you know, passable at first. I haven't noticed anything glaring, although I've had some scouts say to me, like, you watch that over a full season, you're going to notice some things that are hard to watch as far as first basemen go. But yeah, I think there's something there. They have something where they can start putting together different pieces and really platoon the hell out of that position and spend money elsewhere. That's what I think we're learning with the past month and a half and what hopefully continues in September. They have something there that they can use. I don't know if it leads to them being a competitive team, but that's on them to figure the rest of that out this offseason. But I don't think you should go out and spend big on first base, in my opinion, because there's just not that guy. There's not some 27-year-old first baseman that's like, this is like, you know, the next great first baseman that just needs a heel slug for the next 10 years. That guy isn't there. And even if he is, I mean, remember when Jed and Theo first came, there were two big first basemen on the market in Prince Fielder and Albert Pujols. How many people were telling them to go get those guys? That's great that they didn't, right? They were right to not go get the plotting first baseman and give them 10-year insane deals and watch them break down almost immediately.
That would be an amazing troll move by Jed just to bring back Pujols next year on like a veteran minimum.
He always hits it Wrigley, right? So.
And then like the people had their Pujols Cubs jerseys, like bringing them out of the closet. Like, I'm in. You know, a Pujols, Schwindel, Rivas, you know, just put three roster spots to first base, you know, and spend all your money on pitching because I really don't think they can be holding, you know, four inning auditions at a time in April and May and June next year and keep anyone happy. So to me, that's where all the money goes to the rotation. And I think they would get a pretty good return on their investment in that area.
Yeah, we'll definitely be digging in a lot in the weeks and months ahead on the rotation and as it relates to what has been uncovered or not internally and what's available or not in the offseason. Before we wrap, wanted to give you guys a chance to plug what I thought was a really fantastic piece. I was sort of like both very much waiting for this piece, but also kind of dreading it because then we have to relive the trade deadline and what happened and the emotions of it and all of that. And you guys put together a really fantastic behind the scenes write up of what happened, how it happened, why it happened, why things played out like they did. A lot of really interesting nuggets in there that folks should definitely check out. Was there anything that either was left on the cutting room floor that was interesting or that was included, but you wanted to, you know, needle a little further, or just anything that you thought was particularly interesting?
I think you touched on this actually, Brett, when you wrote about our piece. But it stood out to me that the Jake Arrieta game was the tipping point. It felt like that. I think while we were watching it in the press box, I remember everyone thinking like, well, this is definitely the end for Jake, right? He got a couple more starts after that, but that was, we all kind of looked at each other like, he can't make another start. Are they going to claim that they're in this, that they're competing and they're going to put this guy out there every fifth day? Because that's not competitive. But it was also the end of that team. It just was. There were six games out then. They'd lost six in a row. They'd just gotten swept by the first place team that was red hot. Jake Arrieta couldn't get out of the third inning, I believe, of that game. It was handed a 7-run lead. That's bad. That's I mean, we know that's bad, but that felt like a low point. It was the low point. And I think that's one of those things where you can't be hyperbolic about it in the moment, right? We sometimes feel like, okay, don't overreact in the moment. But I think we all kind of had it. We had that right. We're like, this is a huge moment. And it was. And that kind of was the deciding factor because it kind of looked like they were going to get back. Like that would have put them at four games back, right? If they jump out to a 7-game lead, it's like, okay, breathe. It's not a huge losing streak anymore. We back to four games out. We're going to Cincinnati where they didn't score. It wasn't like they didn't pitch in Cincinnati. They didn't score that weekend in Cincinnati. I think that was the next series. And they got swept in Cincinnati, scoring barely any runs, which is weird. So I wonder how much of that was mental and just like, oh, we can't buy a win right now type mentality. But obviously just a huge moment that completely changed the direction of this season.
I also think there are obviously limits to whatever we write or what anyone else writes. And just seeing Chris Bryant, the image of him in the dugout after he found out he got traded and crying there, I thought said more. I had sat through so many press conferences of him saying, sure, I listen, I love being a Cub. And then I'd go on Twitter after tweeting it out and be like, Boris won't let it happen. He's out of here. And it was just this kind of, no matter what he said, people always assumed he'd be gone. And I think just his reaction in the moment, just spontaneous, totally genuine, I thought summed up his true feelings about his Cubs experience. There were some complications within that, some moments of friction and tension. But I think leaving the building, it was this emotionally exhaustive process, and that he was very anxious in those final minutes, sitting in the clubhouse, conversing with David Ross, going down, walking down the stairs into the batting tunnel there with his phone, which he normally doesn't do, that he didn't want to leave. But as he saw everyone else leaving, he was like, really? This is how it's gonna go down? And that he wound up in really an ideal scenario that I think would be the odds-on favorite to be his next team for the next, say, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, fantastic piece if you are emotionally disconnected enough to get through it at this point. And I thought you guys did a fantastic job. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Rooney at The Athletic, where you can get that piece. And this is On to Waveland, which is the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We would think that that is swell of you to do that. So have a great weekend ahead. We will see you next week, and we'll be back on our good stuff. The Cubs probably, what, 6-game winning streak by then? Yeah, we'll talk about it. We'll come up with reasons why that's actually a good thing, or at least I will. So thank you, folks. Take care. Back at you soon.